Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Welcome back, everyone. Jim Perry is with us again this evening. This is part 2 of his first interview. If you have not listened to that interview, please go and listen to it. It's very, very fascinating stuff, and I think tonight will be even more fascinating. So, Jim, welcome back to the show. Where might you be Skyping from this evening?
Oh, thank you so much for having me again. I'm honored to be in a second episode, in the second part. I'm talking to you from the middle of an adventure of being boots on the ground with a subject upstate New York, right on the Hudson, and it's raining cats and dogs. It's super choppy out. I feel like I'm on a cruise ship somewhere right now. Very, very moody and very appropriate, I think, for the show.
Yes, I think very appropriate. As we get into fall right now, we have, like in Minnesota, we have like 2 days of good color leaves on the trees, and then they're all on the ground. So, you know, can't wait. I would bet, though, up in New York, though, I bet you have some pretty nice looking trees up there. Leaves. Well, how's your foliage right now?
You know, it's starting to turn. I was just at the main street yesterday, and it was starting to turn a little bit and looking beautiful. And yesterday was like a really crisp day.
Yeah.
I'm based out of the Pacific Northwest. So right now where the leaves are really starting to turn, and it's actually getting a little warmer because we have these kind of cool Indian summers that happen over there sometimes.
Right.
And so, yeah, we get a little bit of a good time before it just rains for seemingly ever.
Yeah, so. I know. Yeah. Forever. Underline that. From now until all the way through until we get snow, that's what's going to happen here as well. We treasure our good days here. Believe me, we take full advantage of them. So, well, Jim and I had been talking in the last episode about the paranormal and some of our experiences and with that, and this episode's going to be a little bit more different. We're going to talk a little bit about auras. We're going to talk a little bit about talking and communicating with haunted objects. And, of course, our final piece will be Jim's anticipation coming up here with meeting with somebody who is actually, I believe he said, a vampire. So that should be pretty interesting. So let's get at this. Jim, before I forget, I need to remind people again about your website in case they're listening to us for the first time. Can you give the website name and any kind of email or links to that website?
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is euphemet.com, and there you can essentially access all of our social media links. You can access ways to subscribe to the show through podcast. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, essentially any podcast platform you can think of. And Euphemet is spelled Euphemet, euphemet.com. And you can find all of that there.
All right. And Jim, if anyone needs to contact you directly, if they feel they have a compelling story they might want to share, what email address would you have for them?
Yeah, please get a hold of me if you have a story. I will come and sleep on your couch for 2 days.
He will, too.
Yeah, I will drill you in your living room about your experiences, and we will eat fantastic meals, and we'll have a good old spooky time.
Jim, I need to have you over to my house then. Okay.
I'm ready. I was going to say, you were telling me stories last episode, and I was going to make a joke about it later today when I invite myself to sleep on your couch for 2 weeks. You can reach me, jim@euphemet.com is the best way to reach me. That's email. I'll probably see that a lot easier than anything on social media. But if you want to get me on social media, I'm @itsjimperry on Twitter and @euphemet on Instagram and on Facebook.
Yep, that sounds good. And again, Jim has a really, really good show that he puts on, especially when people are telling their stories, and real good production team. And I'm very, very impressed with him. And I feel like I have royalty on my show here. So give Jim your ear tonight, because I think we've got some good stuff coming. So, all right, Jim, let's start with our first topic tonight. Let's talk a little bit about auras. I know you had mentioned a little bit about that. First of all, maybe you can explain to our listeners a little bit about what an aura actually is.
Yeah, you know, so I have a pretty rudimentary understanding, and recently when I had my first aura photo taken and actually got to sort of experience these unique colorways and then get a reading based upon that, was the first real solid introduction. I was with this occultist, Jen Sodini, of Evolve and Ascend. And she introduced me to that. We wandered into the shop in Chinatown. I can talk about that a little bit
later. But essentially an aura, for any of those that are familiar with New Age beliefs, it's my understanding that an aura is essentially an energy field. And this energy field that is based off of the seven human chakras, these chakras, when activated, denote a certain colorway in terms of the energy field. And if one were to possess a certain technology that could perhaps capture the actual visuals of what this color field is activated, in which what colors are being expressed, you can actually learn things about what color is ruminating, what chakra is activated. And based off these signs and symbols, you can interpret like sort of remedies for things that are happening in the past, in the present, and the future. And one of the things that was really interesting about auras that I didn't know, and about aura photography, is that aura photography is kind of like a mood ring, in the sense that the interpretation of it does not really sort of satisfy or illustrate a view of you as a whole person. But what it does is it gives you kind of an imprint of what's going on in your moment then. So what's happening that week in your life? What chakras are activated that week? And then based on that, they can also interpret via the colorways that show themselves what last week was like for you and what the upcoming week is going to be like for you. So, you know, I can share a little bit about what my photo was like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, it's interesting if for anyone. I encourage folks to go and do this because it's just kind of a unique and fun thing to do. Whether it is based on something that is really happening and colorways that are emanating out of your chakras, or it's just kind of a cool looking hipster effect, you should definitely try it because it's fun. So we went to this place in Chinatown in Manhattan and popped down into this seat in which looks like some sort of RoboCop torture device. Is I don't know, like, maybe that's not the best way to describe it, but it, you know, they have sensors that are on the armrest, essentially, that you put your hands and your fingers on these metal sort of ligaments that act, I think, as perhaps conductors of some sort. They take your photo with this essentially a camera that looks like similar to something the DMV would have, mm-hmm. You know, very simple kind of looking technology. And, you know, right away, like a Polaroid almost, they have this photo. And my photo had a lot of oranges and yellows. And so they identified that from essentially two different chakras that were very activated in me. And then there were the inclusion of sort of these blues and purples on the perimeter, on sort of the outside edge. And so in a linear fashion, if looking at it from like a perspective of our kind of 3D reality realm of what time is in a linear fashion, they could denote that those purples, they sort of denoted like a more stressful encounter, and these are going to be challenges that you face. You know, here are some of the reasons why, and here's some of the things that you can do to help yourself in that situation. So I think a lot of people, like numerology, like astrology, you know, people can interpret these signs as little tools to really help them improve their life or be ready for certain things or be thoughtful about certain things. And I think the key to this, and why I think it's a fun and worthy thing to participate in, is because it does allow you to be more thoughtful and reflective and think about your life in not just a linear fashion, but something more mysterious. And that perhaps you're not alone either, right? That the universe is saying, like, hey, you know, maybe get a massage next week. You probably need it. You know, and I think that's really cool. Yeah, so that was my experience.
So one of the things I'm going to bring up, Jim had mentioned that his colors were orange and yellow. And so if you look up this a little bit more in detail on the internet, and again, we can believe everything on the internet, but I believe this to some degree. It indicates that he has creative intelligence. And I believe that because in speaking with him and in what he's doing right now, he's a very, very creative guy and he's very insightful, which you brought up purple, but it brought up violet as being insightful. But the darker you get, the darker denotes also, like black indicates health issues. White is like honesty and purity. Silver is you have some energy and bringing up new concepts and stuff like that. But it's kind of interesting. And gold, what do we have here? Best, I can't read my own handwriting, but gold has something... Something that you want the best for humankind. So it's like you, if you have gold around you, you have maybe some of your angels around you. And I actually had a, I deal with a lot of psychics for various reasons. And I had my aura looked at as I walked into a room to meet this psychic once. And it kind of freaked me out because she could see it above my head. And I wasn't necessarily the happiest person at the time I met her, but she didn't tell me the colors per se. She just said, "I see your aura. It's about 6 feet above your head." And I thought, good Lord, 6 feet or 3 feet or something like that. And I just, I've always wondered what colors she was seeing. But I suppose it's probably more gray, more, you know, whatever, because I was kind of in a down mood that day. But interesting stuff there, Jim, about aura. And I agree with you. Everybody should go through something at least once, as long as it doesn't hurt them, you know. So, really fascinating.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to make a twist on this, though. I'm going to twist this, and I don't know what your impression of this would be. Do you think that animals are getting a lot of attention along with humans and psychicness and all that these days, but do you think animals have auras that carry above their heads as well?
I think that if humans do, I think animals would as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that especially what I'm starting to experience from stories from other people and also stories I'm collecting myself anecdotally about relationships with animals is that there's so much there than meets the eye that especially domestic animals, dogs, cats, birds, etc., that we develop such deep relationships with, there is something else going on there. It's not just biology. It's not just pack mentality. There's something else going on there. And so I think that if you can note that something spiritually is going on with humans and that these things that are sort of discussed in New Age circles, I think certainly can apply to animals.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I do believe that there's between humans and animals there are various types of connections that go on, and I'm going to share this just out of the creepy factor here for the moment though, and here comes the creepy factor, Jim. Okay, so this may not pertain to aura so much, but it might in some very twisted way. So I was telling Jim that over the summer, I'm an educator by nature. I'm an investigator. I'm everything you can imagine. But ever since I moved back to Minnesota, I have just taken jobs that I have enjoyed. And for now, okay. And so anyway, I worked at the Minnesota State Fair over the summer, and I worked in the horse barn, something I've never done before. I would not even know the first thing about a horse per se, but I ended up in there in the office. And there's a woman that I will eventually have on the show who claims that she has seen two apparitions in human form that vanished before her eyes while we were working in the horse barn at the fair. Well, there was a she felt that she was having an experience at the time of seeing her first apparition in human form, scared her to death, describes it, will not back down on her story. But she said that I said, well, it would be more convincing, I said, maybe if there was a horse that was near you or by you or saw this thing and it would react. And she got all panicky and she said, but it did. There was a horse that did react. The horse saw this kid apparition that I saw that disappeared, and it just absolutely started to freak out. Well, it is kind of interesting that someone would have that experience. So again, we'll have her on the show hopefully in a month or so. And you talk about animals and the reactions to people, and of course maybe the horse probably saw something dangerous about this, didn't like something about this kid, but apparently it just absolutely went kind of crazy when it saw this apparition kid. But anyway, I asked the question about the auras because sometimes I wonder if animals can see the auras above people's, and that's why they react a certain way, or if it's just a feeling they get. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's certainly possible. I think that with living beings and maybe even things that are more inanimate, you know, I think that there's perhaps an energy field, and I think different perspectives on what reality is. And I think it's completely possible that animals experience reality in a much different way. Does that mean they're maybe privy to other sort of dimensions or realities that we're not? I mean, so often you also, just like your horse story, you'll hear stories all the time about animals being able to have experiences or warn folks of things like cryptids or UFOs or ETs. Animals play a big part in contact stories a lot of times, even if just sort of anecdotally. And so I think there is certainly something there, you know, and a lot of us with pets have had that experience where it's like the dog is barking at a corner in the room.
Yeah, always. Always.
And that feeling is a little weird.
I know. The dog, the cat that's always looking up the stairs, the dog that's barking in the corner. And you know, and it's always, why is it always the upper corner? You know, I mean, it's just, but I've heard this over and over and over again. You hear so many similar stories, and it's not like they're making this stuff up. They're actually able to say it was standing in the corner of the room, you know, and stuff. But we can't see it, but the eyes of these animals, or the way they sense things, maybe it's that too, can feel it and see it. But, you know, that leads us into things that aren't real, things that are don't have a human soul to it. And that brings us to your story about, now you told me you interviewed a haunted object, and that, now that one is interesting because, you know, there's not a lot of people who have actually had conversations with an object. Could you tell the audience a little bit about your experience with that?
Yeah, so I mean, as you're saying that, it seems completely unbelievable, and it's hard to place myself in that situation in real time context because it was so weird, right? But you can listen to this conversation actually happen. I think it's episode 8 of Euphemet, Idol of Nightmares. And in this episode, I'm in Cincinnati. I'm with this couple, Greg and Dana Newkirk, and they are the proprietors of the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult. And so these folks, they travel all over the place with the most curious and haunted collection of curated objects that you'll see anywhere. Cool. I think they have one of the most comprehensive sets of objects around. And essentially their aim is to tell the stories of these objects in a most authentic way. Their aim is not to scare people or to sort of disenfranchise folks from the real stories of these objects. But in essence, they build relationships with the alleged spirits that inhabit these things. They build character forms. And they try to figure out in what way they can help resolve some of the issues related to these hauntings, you know, for anyone familiar with haunted places, with ghosts or spirits or thought forms that are inhabiting a space, usually it's it's for some reason. It's perhaps unfinished business. Well, Greg and Dana try to help finish that business, whether it's them doing it on their own through readings and investigation and collaboration with mediums or other experts, or if it sometimes is with the owners of these things too. You know, they get objects from all over the place all the time. They don't accept everything either, because there's a lot of stuff that isn't really haunted. But they'll have a conversation with the people that are donors for these things first and say, like, hey, wait, like, don't just drop it off. Let's hear what your story is. Let's hear what your interaction with this is. So there's been a few objects that have been sort of the stars of the show for them. And in the episode, I really cover this relationship that they build with this object called Billy. Now, Billy is essentially based off a sculpture of an ancient African spirit symbol. And they use these in rituals, in spiritual practices, in healings and readings. And they're a very important part of the fabric of this specific tribe. So once this thing was in their possession, they found that it was responsible for a lot of horrific and haunted sort of interactions. And when they would have, like the people that had, like, they didn't want it anymore because it was causing trouble, it was causing strife. And so a lot of their early interactions with this spirit of Billy seemed to lend proof to that. Through EVP experiments, they would encounter a lot of yelling, you know, a lot of aggressiveness. Hmm. But detailed in this episode, which I won't be able to do it justice, you'll need to hear it from Greg and Dana, they essentially went down this path where they built a relationship with Billy, helped resolve a lot of those issues, and then really grow into sort of a deep friendship that included Billy giving messages to Greg, visiting him in his dreams, and really taking down this path where they've co-created things with each other. One of the interesting things that happened with Billy as well is that they've essentially created an altar for him, because folks when visiting the museum would bring things for Billy, would bring offerings, cigars, money, rum, whatever it was. You walk into their house and they have an altar set up for him, and it's overflowing with all these little objects, with all these little gifts. You know, I gave Billy a little crystal that I got on one of my journeys, you know. And after this whole story, after sitting there, you know, cross-legged on their floor, and they're talking about Billy, and they're very emotional, and obviously this experience and this statue, for lack of better words, had made such an emotional impact with them that I couldn't help but ask, hey, do you think that I could try to interview him? Do you think that I could get something out of him, right? And they said, you know, let's try it. So, like I said in the previous episode, Greg and Dana are very equipped for all sorts of investigative research purposes. So they have all of the little tools of the trade, right? So they brought out an EVP device where it would record electronic voices in a fashion that would essentially record when there's noise and not record when there's not. So very easily you can see on the recorder even if there's an interaction. So firstly, Greg stood next to me. He held the recorder. I gave Billy my offering, little crystal. And I asked Billy, like, very respectfully, you know, with microphone up to his mouth, I'm doing this show. You might have, you know, heard me, you know, having a discussion with Greg and Dana here in your front room. And, you know, may I ask you what you think about a few things. I asked him a few questions. Nothing happened. Mm. We played back the recorder. Nothing was there.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg goes, give me a minute. Let me try something. So I take a few steps back. I give him a minute with this statue. And Greg whispers some stuff to Billy. I don't know what it is. But I think he was really describing the intent behind what we are trying to do. And I think he maybe asked for a little bit of a favor, you know? So I come back, Greg sets the EVP recorder right next to Billy and goes and sits down on the couch. So now it's just me and Billy. We're standing there. And I decide to change my scope of questioning. I think the first time I was maybe a little too silly. I think the situation in sort of 3D reality, to me, maybe I felt insecure about it. I was trying to interview a statue.
Yeah, I know. Well, how would you... Oh, say, Jim, before you go on, would you tell us just a little bit about what this statue looked like again? I mean, was it in a human form, or was it... what was it?
Yeah, absolutely. So online, you can go on either my Instagram account or to the... can I just find actually the URL real quick for...
Sure. Yeah, I was gonna say that I'm going to have on... I have your Instagram. Are you talking about the www.instagram.com/UFOMet? Is that the one you're referring to?
Yeah, that one should have it on there. Also, within the next week, theparamuseum.com will be a place where you can go and you can see more about Greg and Dana's work, and you can see the entire story of Billy.
Okay.
And you can see what he looks like. And what he is he's a wood caricature sculpture of an African warrior, perhaps, or maybe a shaman. Light character.
Mm-hmm.
He's a dark brown wood, mm-hmm. with very detailed engravings,
mm-hmm.
For features,
yeah.
And beautiful ivory inlays,
mm-hmm.
for eyes, for different sort of ceremonial paint, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if you've seen other sort of African tribe artwork, mm-hmm. and or statues or characters, is very similar to what you'd see in those regards.
And
so,
who had this statue in hand before it got into their hands?
So they received it from a donor. Mm-hmm. A lot of that actual part of the story, I'm a little foggy on, mm-hmm. in terms of what their process was for getting Billy. Mm-hmm. It's a really great part of the story. I think Greg tells it in my episode, and I think he does a lot of justice to how he did it. And I don't think I'd want to try to retrace it at this time.
No, that's okay. The reason why I'm asking is because you mentioned one thing that I know is in the top five or whatever for the potential of being haunted, and that is wood. And
so
when you can, and depending on who was holding on to this piece, and depending on what happened to the person holding onto this piece, sometimes the oils or the energy that especially if you carry it around a lot, or it's something you touch a lot or whatever, and it's being, I call it, charged or energized by its owner or someone who really loved it or who received it from somebody who charged it. That's what I was trying to make the connection of here. I'm going, why would this thing be so haunted? Why would it be, how did they know that this object became haunted? Were people having negative experiences with it? And then that's why they got rid of it. I can't remember. Is that why they got rid of it?
Yeah, that's exactly why. They're having negative experience with it.
Mm.
And they also were scared of it.
Uh-huh.
They were like, this is scary.
Yeah.
We don't like this.
Yeah.
And so they detail some of those experiences in terms of the situation in which it came from.
Yeah.
And it was very, they saw that as well at first. They saw that, okay, through EVPs, through some of the research, like, this thing's not happy. Like, this spirit, whatever it is, it's not happy. And, you know, essentially what they discovered was that, like, well, this was a tool for spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the image of some of the African deities or gods or shamans. So there was a spiritual power that was even greater than that of just a caricature of a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
So that spirit was very frustrated.
Yeah.
And it took a level of care and trust and collaboration to help get this thing in a better place and develop a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw that, you know, through some of their EVPs, and not just the ones that were collected when I talked to this statue.
Mm-hmm.
There's clips of it saying, "I love Dana and Greg," you know, and you look at some of this footage and they're listening to it and Dana's bawling, you know, she's crying her eyes out about it. Because there is such an this is hyperbole sometimes when people say unbelievable, but there's such an unbelievable connection emotionally to some of these objects and the spirits within that it defies like our expectations for what reality is, you know, and to get just a taste of that when I talk to Billy. Because the second time when I put the microphone up to him, a grade sat down, I asked him some questions, and it was more based on the family dynamic. It was, do you like it here with Dana and Greg? What do you think of these cats? You know, the cats are very important in the household.
Mm-hmm.
All these different things, like, who's your favorite cat? He's telling me who his favorite cat is, you know? He's saying, I like it here with Dana and Greg. You know, there's a scribing mirror. Are you familiar with these?
Yeah.
There's a facsimile of that hanging behind his head. They have a real one that operates just like a scribing black mirror. And is one of the most active and kind of the most nefarious pieces in their collection. And Billy hates the mirror. Hates it. And is very adamant about it and has said it over and over again. And so I asked him, you know, what do you think about this mirror? And he says it's a bad mirror, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just got a taste of what it was like to commune with whatever that energy was in a way that there's no way that could have. I have no sort of earthly idea how the responses I got, the candor I received, the good humor, the nature that was very humanistic, how that could be reproduced or fabricated in any sort of way. It's moments like that, Kelly, that make me really, that challenges my ability to keep one foot in and one foot out doing this work.
Well,
there's stories like that that defy.
The one thing that goes through my head is sometimes these objects will not accept other people around them, but they will only accept those of which they really are fond of, which is, did you say Dana and I can't remember, what was his name?
And Greg.
Greg. And so how did Greg say something to this object to give it trust and not faith, but just trust and likability in you to cooperate to the level that it did?
He must have, you know, and the interesting thing is that it's very, and I don't want to step all over sort of the backstory of this because I won't be able to do it in justice, but I remember there being a point in our conversation that, and you can hear it in the story, whereas there's a point in time where Billy, this statue, connects to Greg, and Greg is then essentially given the torch to sort of be this thing's handler. And what would happen, how these statues were typically used in ceremonial fashion, I believe, is that shamans would use them, and these things would attach or choose who these shamans would be.
Hmm.
They would actually be able to possess and use these as tools for divination, for mediumship, etc. This Billy, after building trust, after building this relationship, started to appear to Greg in dreams.
Oh.
And essentially, through several experiences, chose Greg as his ambassador, as his earthly avatar or counterpart, right? So yeah. Whatever it was that Greg said to allow Billy or give him the freedom to or trust in me to be able to interpret a message, I felt, I hold it. It sounds weird, but I hold it with, like, so much esteem.
Mm-hmm.
It made me sort of emotional that night.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was, like, partly due to some of the shock surrounding
it. Yeah, I was going
to
say the shock.
I think it was, you know, it was very shocking. Yeah, the definition of shocking, you know, it was very much that. But it was the sentimentality of it as well, you know. There was a... there was certainly an emotional resonance that I could feel that was just, I'm sure, just one iota of what Greg and Dana felt to this thing.
Well, I wonder, too, though, and also I don't want to use the word danger, but there is a danger sometimes with some of these objects being so attachful to who they choose as their rightful owner that if they ever chose to... say, I don't know, the way it feels to me, they're never going to get rid of this statue, but the thing is someday they have to die. What's going to happen to this statue then? Are they going to take it to their grave with them? You know, I mean, you just wonder sometimes the amount of energy that could potentially be, you know, grappling at somebody could also be a very, I don't want to use dangerous thing, but something that could lead to a very odd possession of somebody. And so I worry for them just because I know that I lived in a house where I had an apparition. Actually, we had a few in there that was very, very possessive of me. Did not like my husband. And so I know what it can do to somebody's emotional state of being, and I know what it did to me while I was in there, and I also saw what it did to my husband. And so I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about where does it go from here, but I think we're going to let the audience sit there and think the same thing. Where will it go from here? And I want to move into the vampire potential story at this point, because you haven't met with this person who's a vampire yet, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
I haven't. It's a fascinating story. He's a very fascinating individual. His name is Zar, Balthazar, and he is a part of a covenant or a group. I only like sort of paused on that because I'm not exactly sure what their group calls themselves yet. I will when I meet them. But essentially, there's an organized group of vampires in New Orleans, but also in cities, in rural areas, in small towns all over the world. There's these groups of vampires. Just like the internet is so good at sort of creating microcosmic communities. Super fans or groups of experiencers or whatever, it's really good at helping create and substantiate groups of vampires. So what's interesting is that the individual I'm going to meet, I'm going to share a meal with him. I think the furthest I'll go is a bloody steak. Right. I think that what they believe is that there is actually a physiological response for them with the inclusion of human blood, that something within their biology is not just craving that, perhaps craving is even the wrong word, but needs it for optimal survival. That they lack certain nutrients that they can't get anywhere except for human blood. I'm not a scientist or a biologist, and I don't know how much of that is even correct, right? But I do know that they believe in it. And so I think that creates a really interesting foundation for some interesting stories and conversations. What's really great about Czar is that, you know, instead of feeding on the homeless, as popular culture would like to let you believe in terms of what vampires do, mm-hmm. Czar actually, he feeds the homeless. He's a part of several community organizations. I believe himself and several other vampires are doing all they can to help build New Orleans into a safer and a better place for those that are disenfranchised, like the homeless or at-risk youth. And I'm going to be able to like sort of see some of that and his place in the community. So I know that he's also involved in voodoo mm-hmm. and a practitioner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say that a part of me, just based on sort of the programming that I've had mm-hmm. in terms of entertainment and TV and stories since forever, I'd be lying if I said that a part of me wasn't a little anxious yeah. about this meeting.
Yeah.
But he's a referral, and everyone I know says he's a beautiful human being and very polite and very nice. And I'm sure it's going to be a joy to share a meal with and go see some sights and do a little bit of venturing with.
So, of course, we're all wondering, of course, are you staying 2 days with this guy in the evening, too? Or are you staying in a separate location?
that's a great question. I'm staying in a separate location.
Oh, okay.
Oftentimes, for myself, there'll be times when I reside with, like, my guests. I, like, really very much embed myself, but I do have my limits, and I do like to be respectful of my guests, especially when I'm first getting to know them sometimes. So on occasion I'll stay in a motel somewhere close by so we can have a little space, and to be honest, and this is a production oriented thing, some episodes are a lot more draining. Yeah. Than others. You could say that some episodes are real vampires on your energy and really take it out of you, and others are a little bit more within my wheelhouse and a place where I'm more comfortable with. It'll be very interesting.
You're not going to are you going to watch him in action as you guys are eating? I mean, is he actually going to, like, chomp right into somebody's neck right in front of you? I know everyone's thinking that, okay? So sorry, not to be disrespectful yeah. of him, but you know everybody's thinking that right now. They're going, will he have the long teeth? Will he chomp into someone's neck? Will he chomp into your neck when you're not looking? I mean, I would feel a little apprehensive too, knowing what we've been exposed to seeing on television, you know?
Yeah, well, here's the thing: is you're not too far off in terms of the implementation of how he gets blood. So, I believe he does. He might have sharp teeth. I'm not sure. I'll have to look at that. But he does have a process where he has donors, and these donors actually go through a very strict medical testing. They go through a very strict diet. You know, very restrictive in terms of what they can eat. And then also suggestions on, hey, if you throw a little pineapple or you throw a little this and that in there, your blood is going to taste better.
Oh,
right?
Geez.
So there is a taste quality to it as well, I think.
Mm.
So his donors are essentially volunteers or people that he has a process of vetting through. Mm. And, you know, it is very interesting how he ingests. He cuts through the skin
mm.
with a medical grade instrument,
mm.
a sharp blade, and he'll then literally suck the blood out of the donor.
Oh.
Usually it's not really at the neck, it's not like at the jugular, it's not at one of these places that I know of, but essentially I think it's on the back, you know, it's usually in one of these places where blood is not substantially pouring out of you when you have a little nick.
Mm-hmm.
And but there is
a bloody process of extraction, which does include like contact from the mouth and the flesh. People have asked me if I'm going to be a donor.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, you know, Jim.
You're like, hey, man, like, you're so boots on the ground. Right. Like I said, I think I have my limits. And I'm not going to say never, but I'm also going to say not this time.
I was going to say thank you. I've just eaten, but thank you for the offering. Oh, my God. I mean, it's just a concept that most of us do not wrap our heads around. And for you to even to be witnessing it is a very brave thing, Jim. So very brave on your part.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to
good luck, Jim.
Work out here for us.
Yeah, so I was going to say, good luck, Jim. I hope I can at least get another episode out of you someday. You know, if you're still around, Jim, if you're still around.
Well, just
be careful and have your plan B in order. And hopefully the guy will be just very respectful and you'll be all right. You'll be fine. So. Well, we have time. We have about 5 more minutes, and I think amazing how fast this show went. I think even faster than the first one. But I think the last question for a 5-minuter would be your exploration of the. No, I want this one. It's such a hot thing. So, you communicated possibly with the Sasquatch via a secret code. Where was that, and what did you discover in that process?
So I discovered this guy, Brian Bland, and he's a guy who has been interested in Sasquatch and cryptids for a long time. He started to develop a sort of a calling. He started encountering thought forms. He lived in a small town in British Columbia, right next to the mountain range, this epic mountain range. Where the Cascades extend into British Columbia. You know, if there is to be a place where Sasquatch is, seemingly on visuals alone, this is it.
Yeah.
It's everything you think where Sasquatch would be.
Yeah.
He, after hearing these sort of messages or thought forms, compelling him to go out into the forest and interact with something, he found friends, he found guidance online for folks that had the same messaging, were compelled to the forest. These folks went up there and they started to essentially get downloads of information that told them that through the use of sigils that they would make with rocks, stone, pieces of wood, fern, all these natural objects, that they could communicate with a Sasquatch family that existed. And in fact, these Sasquatch family that were broken allegedly into tribes would give them messages. These messages would look like letter forms. They'd look like circles. They'd be these very expressive patterns, and they would be left. And for these folks like Brian to see and interpret. And what they'd kind of be, you know, last episode we talked a little bit about the Mothman, they would sort of be harbingers or nods or signs to something else or some other greater synchronicity that would occur. And so through a series of synchronicities and countless signs from these sigils, they interpreted a general messaging from these Sasquatch that they're really there to help raise the consciousness or vibrations of the humans that were interacting with them, and that the Sasquatch were not completely physical beings. They do allegedly live in a physical space, like that you can smell, touch, hear, and see, but they have more of anomalous movement and a sort of a ability to phase in and out of this reality. But essentially, they're spiritual beings is what Brian and his community believe. Since then, Brian has started a Facebook group, and there's tons of them online. Like, online's just lousy with all these Facebook groups with spiritual Sasquatch sightings, messages, and sigils. And now it's becoming this great experiment where folks are sharing pictures and photographic evidence of these sigils
and their communications. And now they're putting things together, like this tribe member was down in California, and now they're up in British Columbia. And, you know, it's a fascinating world in which, you know, these folks are including a lot of stuff into their space, which is usually not welcomed into the Sasquatch sphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sasquatch, just like all these other dimensions of paranormal exploration investigation, essentially you would think that there would be a little bit more of an open mind in terms of how we can interpret these things. But I think a typical Sasquatch explorer, okay, so to qualify, someone that believes a 12-foot hairy beast can show up anywhere, appears, and lives in these forests, and that perhaps has magical powers, he thinks that, like, maybe this other thing with them leaving signs is woo-woo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
It's too weird. You know what I mean?
So, I know.
Yeah, it's interesting how that happens, but this group, essentially, Brian and his ilk, are taking a more holistic approach to what they think they believe and what they know they don't, right?
Right.
So it's very, very fascinating. That's, I think it was episode 7 of Euphemet. It's called The Sasquatch Code.
Okay.
It's with Brian Bland. I recommend that. It's a very heartfelt journey for this guy. And it's easy to see how people that are having these experiences on the fringe of our known reality connect with these things so emotionally.
Yeah.
It's always a human story. You can't take the human out of these stories.
No. And you know, the thing is we've heard for years, I think it's more accepted now that they actually do exist. I know that there's a podcast, I can't remember if it's before mine or on a different day, that they're from Minnesota, a couple gals. I know that they've discovered some Sasquatches down in Indiana, where I lived. I know that they've been reported up in the upper forests of Minnesota. It seems like, and I used to live in Canada, and they're reported way up by British Columbia somewhere. And I think they're essentially all over. But the fascination with a lot of people, I know some have actually seen some of these, what are they actually about? And of course, people have yet to technically capture one, and of course they're very tall and aggressive, and they can be a very dangerous animal if they feel like they're in danger. So very interesting stuff on that. Well, I just cannot believe we managed to go round two here, but we managed to complete our second part of our interview. And honest to God, Jim, good stuff, really interesting, lots for us to think about, lots of us to take away from. And I wish you the best with the vampire, that's for sure. You know, good luck, Jim. You know,
yeah,
I should,
thank you.
Should
we'll
make
let you know when I get on the other side.
Good Lord. And just let me know where you end up on all of that. And of course, listeners, we appreciate very much again you listening to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. Stay tuned, as I hope to have a few new episodes, of course, coming up in the next maybe month and a half. I'm going to be out for a while, and but then hopefully back on with some very interesting guests, just like Jim. Jim is very, and make sure you go to his website, www.euphomet.com, and learn more about what he is up to, because he's what I call my traveling guy here, and getting some good stuff for the world to think about. So on that note, thank you, Jim, for being on the show, on both of my shows.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I think I lost you, Jim. Wake up, Jim. And and again, of course, we'll hope to have him back in the future to see what he's been up to. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening, take care, and until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.